Attention all WUSB listeners. It is Radiothon time at WUSB, which means it's a time where we get to ask you for something in return for all the amazing programming you hear 24/7, 365 days per year. Call 631-632-6901 or go to www.wusb.fm. That's 631-632-6901. Or www.wusb.fm. Make a pledge. Support radio that is mostly run by volunteers because we love what we do and we see the value in putting forth the information and the music that we put forth free of charge. You don't hear commercials, so this is the only commercial you get. Call 631-632-6901 or go to www.wusb.fm. Thank you for your much-needed support. WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's in front of you at all times, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And that's what all of us want. As some of you might know, we're just 4 days away from the off-year elections coming this Tuesday, November 7th. As I've expressed before, it feels like elections these days are even more important than they used to be. It's no longer that different candidates simply have different points of view, but as some of you may know, there are now candidates on a national level whose views and goals can actually be perceived as a threat to our democracy. And then there are many politicians who feel that they have alternative facts on scientific issues, often based upon, well, pretty much nothing. And of course, that makes the alternative scientific facts neither science nor fact. This departure from reality became clearly evident to me when I saw the national leaders of one of our two main political parties continuously and consistently deny the science of climate change. That science that the best experts across the globe understand and have in many cases been very vocal about warning us about the need to take action immediately before it's too late. And so that became my 101 test for politicians. That is, do they understand and stand by the science that climate change is real and the result of human activities? If they do, it doesn't automatically mean that they're great candidates, but just worthy of looking into further, because all of us have different priorities in terms of why we're voting and who we're voting for. On the other hand, if a candidate doesn't get climate change right, I know that they're either unable to interpret what is actually rather straightforward scientific information, or that they are willing to mislead the public in the interest of, who knows, power, money, or some other motivator that certainly does not serve the public good. Either way, not understanding or denying climate science is not acceptable for a leader. It's also important to remember that legislating to address climate change, no matter how you slice it, can and will save an enormous number of lives. And that's because, in addition to the increasing number of those dying from climate change today, as I've stated over and over again on the show, taking action on climate change goes hand in hand with taking action on air pollution. And air pollution is an issue that should not be controversial. We all need to breathe. And air pollution in this country has been calculated to kill from tens to hundreds of thousands of Americans each year while sickening many millions. And worldwide, air pollution kills perhaps up to 10 million people, according to some estimates. So all of you who care about life, please consider including the environment in your definition of supporting life. I would challenge anybody to name another issue that we have the knowledge and technology to address today that could save so many lives, or conversely, that could put so many more lives at risk. With that said, this show is about the upcoming elections and about the environmental issues that impact New Yorkers and Long Islanders. We'll also talk about some of the candidates who have earned the endorsement of the New York League of Conservation Voters. Additionally, we'll talk about what you need to know about voting this year, either via early voting available now or on this coming election day on Tuesday. The bottom line is that we want those of you who prioritize environmental issues to know who the environmental candidates are who share our concern for our collective health and well-being. And we also want you to be familiar with the issues. And I'm pleased to say that we have the perfect guest to help us get informed and navigate the issues and candidates that are before us this year. Her name is Julie Tai, and she's the president of the New York League of Conservation Voters and the New York League of Conservation Voters Education Fund. This is her fifth year at the League, where she oversees the organization's policy, political, development, programmatic, and communications teams. Due in part to the League's and her advocacy, the state enacted the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the nation's most progressive climate law. And voters passed the $4.2 billion Environmental Bond Act, which we'll talk about shortly, and a host of other pieces of legislation to reduce emissions from the transportation and building sectors. Previously, Julie served as the chief of staff of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, where she oversaw the DEC's policy development, helped run the nearly 3,000 employee agency, and served as a key member of the organization's leadership team. She was instrumental in advancing the DEC's legislative priorities, including a 10-year, $1 billion Superfund authorization. She was also a primary negotiator for the landmark $2.5 billion Clean Water Infrastructure Act, the incorporation of the Climate Change Program into New York's historic $300 million Environmental Protection Funds, three successive constitutional amendments, and the most comprehensive electronics recycling law in the country. Julie Tai, thank you for joining us on the Healthy Planet Radio Show and for all the work that you've been doing on behalf of all of us who breathe, drink, and eat.
No, thank you.
Julie, the New York League of Conservation Voters says that it is the only statewide environmental organization in New York that fights for clean water, clean air, renewable energy, and open space through political action, and that is nonpartisan, pragmatic, and effective. So please talk a little bit about the work of the New York League of Conservation Voters and describe how your work involves evaluating, endorsing, and electing.
Sure. So thank you first for having me on once again to talk about these important environmental issues, and particularly in the context of elections. I often say that the number one thing that you can do as an individual if you want to fight climate change and support environmental protection is to vote. Right, because there's limits to what we as individuals can do. We need the government to be taking action so that we have institutional changes that are systemic and not just something that we have the power to control ourselves. So that is very often what I say. It's the number one thing that you can do. And we believe that. And so we work on that in a variety of ways. So every year we develop policy agendas working with our partners across the environmental movement, as well as partners in transit and in the clean energy space to help identify what we're going to be working on in the coming year. And that usually covers, sort of very broadly speaking, clean water, clean air, clean energy, zero waste, clean transportation. Fighting climate change obviously covers a bunch of those things. Buildings work is a big lot of what we're doing right now, and open space protection. So those are sort of the big buckets of categories that we work on. We use those policy agendas to help drive what state legislation we're going to work on and what we support or what we oppose. We issue memos to state legislators so that they understand our position on those issues. And we create a scorecard for priority bills that, again, we work on with the partners that we develop the policy agenda with. And we use that scorecard to hold our state elected officials accountable. Similarly, National LCV creates a scorecard for our candidates in Washington, D.C. That's something that we then use to inform our endorsement process when we're considering candidates for office, which we do in areas where we have local chapters at the town, county, city levels. We can't do villages. We don't quite have enough people to do that yet, as well as at the state level and the federal level. And we do that, so sort of the cycle of accountability is reinforced when we do that, so that we're telling people what we want them to do to protect the environment. We're working with them and educating them during the legislative process. We're ranking them on how they do with those initiatives. And then we're treating that as part of the consideration for when we do endorsements for candidates, which we do. We do pretty broadly, and we've actually had an increase in the number of candidates who have been seeking our endorsement the last few years. In partnership, we have, you mentioned I have two hats, right?
Yes.
I think technically I have five hats, but you know, the league is the organization that does the endorsements and that does advocacy. But we also have a sister organization, the New York League of Conservation Voters Education Fund, and they are a strict nonprofit that works to educate, engage, and empower New Yorkers to be effective advocates for the environment. And we do that by doing civic engagement. We encourage people to vote. We're not telling them in those cases, we're not telling them who to vote for. We're making sure they're going out to vote. The last few years, we've been encouraging people to vote early. I, for one, voted on Saturday morning at 9:15 a.m. There was absolutely zero people waiting in line for me. Since I moved to New York City from Albany, I have yet to vote on Election Day because I always vote early. It's been fantastic, and I really think it's something that more people should take advantage of because there's no lines. And generally speaking, you're not learning any more information in the last 10 days before an election. So that's really exciting. But we also hold candidate forums. So that we make sure that there's a platform for people to be hearing where candidates stand on environmental issues. You know, in 2020 was the first time that we had a presidential debate that talked just about climate change, right? And before that, in 2016, not one question was asked during any of the presidential debates that talked about any environmental climate issue.
I noticed.
Yes. Yeah. So we think it's important for us to do that so that voters know where candidates stand on environmental issues. And of course, we do other civic engagement work, like educating people about a variety of different things. You know, we've been doing educational programs on offshore wind. We have one coming up with our partners at Citizens Campaign for the Environment later this fall. We're going to do something also with Citizens Campaign for the Environment on battery energy storage. We do a lot of issue-based campaigns to encourage people, for example, not to use plastics, reducing the use of single-use plastics. So we do a lot of education on environmental issues so that New Yorkers are better prepared and educated about a variety of environmental issues.
I will say that New Yorkers and everybody in the country actually owes you a debt of gratitude for all the work that you've done, because the changes that are being done by you, New York League of Conservation Voters, are really impacting all of us in some very deep ways and setting the tone for what can take place going forward. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Before the 2022 elections, I had you on the show and we talked about some of the League's endorsed candidates, as well as some of the important issues around Long Island and the environment. We went into some detail on the many benefits of the $4.2 billion Clean Water, Clean Air, Green Jobs Bond Act that you were strongly promoting, and that was on the ballot at that time. And I'm happy to say, if you don't know already, that that act has passed. So a very belated congratulations, and thank you to the League again for giving that your effort.
No, thank you. That was really important, and we're delighted to work with a variety of partners. It wasn't just the environmental movement who was advocating for this. It was also local governments. It was also civic organizations. It was the labor movement. There was actually no organized opposition, because we know that New Yorkers really care about the things that are included in our Bond Act, including more investments in water infrastructure, which we know is especially important on Long Island, on climate, on, you know, both to mitigate the impacts of climate change and make our communities more resilient to flooding, for example, as well as to actually reduce emissions. One of the things I'm really proud of is that there's $500 million available for electric school buses. That was really exciting. There's money to protect open space preservation and recreation areas so that we can have more of the limited lands that are available and haven't yet been disturbed on Long Island. Some of those could be protected with some of these funds. So that's really exciting. And really what is impressive is that this is not a partisan issue, right? We know that on Long Island, for example, more than 60% of people voted yes for the Bond Act. And that to me really says a lot, that people really care about the environment. You know, statewide, it was 67% voted for it. It was more than 60% in both Nassau County and Suffolk County voted for it. So really strong support from Long Island to support that Bond Act and to get it passed. And now we're starting to see the fruits of our labor to come to fruition in that some of that money is starting to flow. Of course, it takes a little while. You want to make sure there's new programs that are going to be set up as part of this. For example, there will be a buyout program for structures or homes that are in flood-prone areas. Well, we have never done that before, except when it's happened immediately following something devastating like Superstorm Sandy. So that's something that the state needs to be very careful about because they're setting something new up. They were able to start the water infrastructure flowing very fast because the state of New York in 2015 established a program called the Clean Water Infrastructure Act that's administered by the Environmental Facilities Corporation. It goes to local governments. So it already, the structures already exists. So they're just basically providing an infusion of money that enabled that to flow more rapidly. So that we can get money out to water districts and to sewer districts and local governments so they can be investing in improving their water infrastructure, as well as do things like do septic system replacement programs. So there's more money available for all of that because of this Bond Act. So thank you to all those people on Long Island who voted yes on the Bond Act, because it's really important. It's not common that the government comes to the voters and say, hey, we want to spend money in this way. What do you think? And so a Bond Act is really a way to do that so that voters have the opportunity to say, this is important enough that we agree, you know, we want the government to go and spend this money to incur the debt for the state because it's a valuable investment. And our expectation is that this $4.2 billion will actually leverage, you know, $8.7 billion in other funding to help make this happen for a total of $8.7 billion in spending. So we're really going to get almost, you know, a 2-to-1 match because we'll be able to draw down federal funding. We'll be able to do more projects. There'll be private investment. It's going to generate thousands of jobs as a result of that. So this is a really exciting opportunity for all of New York.
And it's tax neutral.
It is. It's not really adding to the debt. You're not paying something similar. So it's exciting.
It really is. And this is a model of what I think, I imagine, in my hopeful look at the future, that we could all rally around environmental and life support issues like this. Labor, environmental leaders, civic leaders, everybody should be behind these things because it's really for the benefit of all of us. The fact that it's become a partisan issue is just some kind of crazy, I hope, temporary deviation from where we'll go in the future.
Yes. Well, again, I think that's why you see the Bond Act. It wasn't a partisan issue.
No.
So I think it does depend on the issue and how people frame it. And frankly, how some of our politicians choose to make something partisan as opposed to something that's really pragmatic. You know, often say, right, clean water and clean air are not partisan issues. Everybody wants both of those things. So there's absolutely no reason for there to be partisan differences and in those end outcomes.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I've said that many, many times on this show. And one day we'll realize that. The world will realize that and act in accordance.
Exactly.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're talking to the New York League of Conservation Voters President Julie Tai about how to vote for pro-environment issues and candidates in the upcoming November 7th elections. You can find out more about Julie Tai and the work of the New York League at www.nylcv. That's www.nylcv.org. So on last year's radio show, we also talked about the governor's race and the league endorsed Kathy Hochul over Lee Zeldin. I would like you to take a few minutes to talk about Governor Hochul's environmental performance this year. Also talk about some of the environmental wins from the budget and legislative session earlier this year, and what role the New York League of Conservation Voters played in making any of this happen.
Sure. So, you know, really, the governor, when she first took office, I mean, literally the first weekend she came into office, she had to first deal with a hurricane down on Long Island. And so I think she knows firsthand, both from that experience, you know, immediately after having become governor, but also for her whole lifetime, she's been dealing with environmental issues. You know, she grew up in Buffalo, where she was, you know, literally, she talks about how the orange skies and the summer now that we just saw were not unusual for her to see in Buffalo from the pollution from the Bethlehem Steel plants. And so I think she really has a deep appreciation and understanding of the environment and why it's so important to improve air quality and water quality. And I think she's made this a priority, and she's been a national leader. You know, clean energy is something that is clearly top of mind and very front and center for her administration. Last year helps ensure that we got, you know, as part of the Bond Act, a requirement to move all of our school buses to electric school buses over the next 10 plus years, because oftentimes the air quality inside of a school bus can actually be worse than the air quality outside of a diesel school bus. So that's really exciting. And she made sure that there was money in the Bond Act for that. She's the reason why it was a $4.2 billion Bond Act instead of a $3 billion Bond Act. So she said this $3 billion is a lot, but we have more that we need to do. And so she increased that amount. So really excited about that. She's been making sure that we are working towards a, you know, cleaner transportation system with adoption of some laws and regulations requiring our passenger cars, our trucks and SUVs to be zero emissions starting in 2035. And now the state is working towards how are we going to make all these goals happen in the state's climate law? And we know that it's not going to be easy. We know that there's a lot of work to do for us to not just get all of our energy to be clean, and there's challenges associated with that, but how are we transitioning our transportation system? How are we decarbonizing our buildings? Many people don't know that actually our buildings are our largest source of pollution here in their state. We've done some other policies over the last decade that have actually reduced the amount of pollution associated with the energy system, such that our buildings now are really the largest source of pollution from a climate perspective. So that is definitely something we need to do. You know, we've had some wins in the budget this year that will help us to advance those programs. You know, one thing that the governor advanced was establishing a program called Cap and Invest, where they're seeking to reduce the amount of emissions across our entire economy with the transportation sector, with buildings, with energy, with agriculture, potentially with waste, and say, okay, there's going to be a cap on this. It's going to decline over time in a gradual and predictable way, so that the whole industry knows what we need to do in order to reach those goals, and there's time to plan. But, you know, in order to do that, you provide some incentives that then you then would be investing in programs that would enable people to make these transitions easier and to make sure that they're not unduly burdensome on consumers. So that's something that we're looking forward to seeing more from the state on. All new buildings are now required to be fossil free. So when you're constructing new buildings, you know, we obviously have a lot of old infrastructure. You know, when I lived in Albany, my house was built in 1853. I can tell you it's not the most energy efficient, but we are passed a law that requires all new construction to be fossil free. So that means we don't have to go back and fix it later. It'll be more energy efficient. It won't cause pollution by relying on those fossil fuels. So that's really exciting. There's a lot of new technology. Yeah, and there's a lot of new technology that makes it easier and cheaper. And actually, two of the things that we've gotten done in the last 2 years are really exciting, that there's sort of a more to come on. But one is we've adopted a law called the Utility Thermal Energy Network and Jobs Act. We call it UTENJA. But it's really taking a neighborhood scale approach to decarbonizing how we heat and cool our buildings, and using basically what are currently either wastes or geothermal sources of energy in order to do that. All the utilities in the state are required to do pilots, looking at how they could potentially create these kind of neighborhood scale thermal energy networks. So sort of like geothermal, but for your neighborhood and not just for your home. And there's some cool projects like here in the city. Con Ed, for example, is looking at connecting a data center with some apartment buildings that are run by the New York City Housing Authority, because the data center is constantly creating waste heat from all the Exactly. cooling they're doing of their data processors. And right now, all they're doing is exhausting it into the environment. So this way, we're capturing it, and we're going to be able to use it to support heating of these buildings. You can also, there's inherent heat in the sewage system, for example. So you can capture the heat from the sewage, and you're using, you know, just like a water pipes in order to transmit that heat amongst the buildings in a network. There's waste heat from the subway, which I would love to find a way for the MTA to have some alternative sources of revenue in a way that would also reduce how hot it is in the subway in the summertime. So there are some really cool things, you know, geothermal, well, you know, all these things are being explored right now by all the utilities across the state. And we're really looking forward to that. But then we
very
also-
Very advanced and very hopeful. Yeah. When you start putting buildings together, not just looking at it on a per building basis, but adding everything together, like you said, balancing the load.
You got it. What's interesting, most interesting about that, though, is like it's new to the US, but it's not new to the world. Hmm. Right. So like one of the developers that we've been working with is at Tishman Speyer. And they were like, we went to our visit the buildings in Paris and said, "Where? Show me your plant." And they said, "We don't have one." So they're doing this in Europe. They're doing it in Ireland. They're doing it in France. They're doing it in Sweden. So we know that it can be done. And so it's a really exciting opportunity, and it'll be done at scale. And so that means it'll also be, you know, good to support union jobs. And we're hoping that they're also including in that getting folks from disadvantaged communities, people of color, low-income people, people who are currently working in the fossil industry, getting all those folks, getting them into jobs so that we can help with this transition in a way that is better than we've done it in the past. And so similarly, we want the state to lead by example. And so we got a requirement this year for the state to look at their facilities and come up with decarbonization action plans for 15 of the top polluting facilities that they own. And one of them is Stony Brook. And they are going to be, you know, creating a plan for how Stony Brook can decarbonize its whole campus. It's complicated, right? Stony Brook has dorms and they have hospitals. And so, you know, no one is judging them for it, but we know that we can do better. And we would like them to be using thermal energy networks as the state looks at how they're going to implement these action plans. And to that end, we actually got successfully our collaboration, which is unions and climate justice groups and environmental organizations and building industry sector people, we got $30 million for SUNY Albany to enable them to replace their fossil fuel chillers with a thermal energy system so that they will not require any natural gas in the whole summer. So it's a really exciting, So those are like some new things that happened in the budget. Some of the other things that happened was we got more money for the Environmental Protection Fund, more money for the Clean Water Infrastructure Act. We've got increased funding for the MTA operating aid to make sure that they didn't go off a fiscal cliff. We all know they've been dealing with changes in how they've been used, you know, both on the railroad as well as on the subway and on the buses. And so really, we needed to make sure that they maintained their ability to operate without decreasing service. We know how important that is for commuters and for visitors alike to come, who, you know, want to come to and from the city. I love the easiest way to get to Long Island is for sure the railroad. I always find whenever I come back to the city, it's when I am like, oh, why didn't I take the train?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, so it's a great opportunity, and that's really important. And of course, one thing that we got done that is not getting done at the local level is we helped get past the Suffolk County Water Quality Restoration Act, which would have helped the local government get funding it needs to support water quality issues in Suffolk County. But of course, the Suffolk County legislature failed to act on that, which is really rather unfortunate, because again, this is a program that no opposition was to be found. And yet the Suffolk County legislature chose not to act on it, which was pretty darn disappointing.
Actually, I wanted to talk more about that. So since you brought it up now, talk about the Water Quality Restoration Act, how it came to be, and a little bit of what was going on leading up to when it was supposed to be voted on to be put on the ballot and when it was voted down.
So for a local government to assess any sort of taxes, they need permission from the state of New York to do that. And so earlier in the year, the Suffolk County executive, Steve Ballone, asked for the state to advance legislation that would enable them to implement a plan called the Suffolk County Subwatersheds Wastewater Plan, which is a little bit of a mouthful, but it's something that the county really looked at and the county legislature approved previously, an opportunity to really create a very small tax. It was an eighth of a cent sales tax increase, which I think is 12 cents on $100 purchase is what it would have amounted to, something along
those
lines.
Which is nothing. In today's world, 12 cents on $100 is
nothing. Barely demonstrable. Right.
Right.
You wouldn't even know that it's there.
No.
Right. And the funding would have had to been used to do septic system upgrades and sewer upgrades. It was something that was strongly supported by the environmental movement, by the labor community, by the construction industry. In fact, the county held a hearing, and I think 50 people spoke, and 49 of them spoke in favor of adopting this particular law that would have enabled the voters to decide, just like the Bond Act, the voters were going to decide whether or not they wanted to impose this very modest fee to invest in improving Suffolk County's water quality. And of this hearing, 49 people spoke in favor of it. One spoke against it. And the person that spoke against it was because they think that there needs to be more nitrogen, which nobody else agrees with whatsoever, including, you know, Chris Gobler, who is at, you know, a world famous water scientist at Stony Brook, was able to sort of push back on that. And so it was really not clear what was happening there. But it was clear that the Suffolk County legislature chose to play politics with the health of their constituents, because we know that when we're discharging our sewage through these old septic systems that need to be replaced and upgraded or need to be put onto sewer systems, they're putting at risk drinking water quality. They're putting at risk our wetlands that are important for protecting our communities from, you know, the impacts of storms. It was very, very unfortunate. Again, no opposition except for, you know, seemingly some politicos who I think were afraid that we were going to get more voters out to vote for this particular initiative, which is funny because we weren't planning on that then, but we are now.
So that basically you had everybody on board, everybody agreed, it was moving forward. And then we think that they figured out that it could bring more Democratic voters to the polls on Tuesday, and then they voted it down.
That's right. It was very unfortunate. And as a result of that, NYLCV chose not to support any Republican candidates for the Suffolk County legislature, which is not true of us overall.
No.
I mean, in the Suffolk County executive race, we've endorsed Ed Romaine because he's been standing by us on the environment, on offshore wind, on clean water, on waste reduction. We have candidates in Nassau County, in the county legislature. We've endorsed candidates on both sides of the aisle. We've endorsed a number of town supervisors on both sides of the aisle. And we normally do not take hard lines because, to your point earlier, we are not a partisan organization. Mm-hmm. But we were so disgusted with what happened in this particular event where they refused to pass this initiative that had bipartisan support, including with the state legislature, right? The state senators and the state assembly people from Suffolk County all supported this going on the ballot this year. So it was really unfortunate. Ed Romaine said at our candidate forum that he supported this going on the ballot. So we're really disappointed with what they've chosen to do. And so, you know, we have taken action and decided not to endorse any of those candidates. We certainly have endorsed a whole slew of candidates for the Suffolk County legislature. As has been publicly reported, our PAC, NYLCV PAC, which is an independent expenditure campaign, is working with the New York State laborers and to launch a six-figure independent expenditure to educate voters about the significance of the Clean Water Plan and the fact that it was obstructed. And they're doing a campaign reported in Politico earlier this week, you know, against three candidates, and that's Dominic Thorne, Manuel Esteban, and Stephanie Bontempi, to make sure that people know that the reason why this initiative is not on the ballot is because these legislators, amongst others, we're responsible for killing it.
That's a big deal. That's a very big deal. Stephanie came to my door a few weeks ago and I asked her about climate change because she said she was pro-environment. And she said, well, there are different opinions on climate change. And I had to tell her that there weren't different opinions and explain why there weren't different opinions that were valid and what the scientific consensus was. And I asked her to be a leader and to read up about an issue that she obviously hadn't. And she said she would. But that's unfortunate to hear that she would vote against that as well.
Yep.
And by the way, you are endorsing her opponent in that race.
That's correct. That is correct. We have endorsed a number of candidates in the Suffolk County Legislature. You know, we're really encouraging people to vote for the Democrats in these races. So yes, we've endorsed Rebecca Sannon, we've endorsed Catherine Kent, we've endorsed Ann Welker, we've endorsed Steve Englebright, of course, used to be the chair of the Environment Committee for the state, Dorothy Cavalier, Ryan McGarry, Thomas Donnelly, Eve Meltzer-Krieff, Samuel Gonzalez and Jason Richburg in the Suffolk County Legislature. And those are the only seats that we weighed in on.
Dr. Eve Meltzer-Krieff came to my house yesterday and speaking to her like a breath of fresh air in terms of her views on environment and many other issues that we discussed.
Right. So that's why we endorsed her.
Yes, absolutely. That was a good endorsement. Some of the endorsements made by the League of Conservation Voters are pretty obvious, like choosing Kathy Hochul over Lee Zeldin because he has an abysmal voting record over his lifetime. But I'm guessing there are other races where it's hard to make a call because both candidates seem to have good records or say the right things. Does the LCV only endorse candidates who are clearly better than their opponents, or do you call it even when it's less clear?
Sometimes we do when it's less clear. I mean, sometimes it is very obvious. And sometimes you have two good candidates. I mean, I have no doubt, for example, that if Dave Colon were to win, that he would be a partner.
That was my next question, right?
Right. But Ed Romaine has had to do the hard things and actually deliver on that. That's one of the reasons why we chose him, right? It's like, it's one thing to talk about doing something, but we all know it's very hard to actually do the thing when you're an elected official. There's a lot of competing interests that you have to face. So we often take that into account, and we support people who have been doing the things that we've been asking them to do when they've been in office. We actually made statewide, we had a record number of endorsements for what we call an off-year election cycle. We have 131 races that we endorsed in this year across the state. We had 34 of those on Long Island. So that's, you know, again, county ledge, county executive, supervisors, mayors. So it's certainly something that's important to us. And we take into consideration, you know, their record. We take into consideration, you know, how well-versed they are. Like you said, when they come to the door, we similarly interview candidates to see where they are on environmental issues. I myself participated in the interviews of the two candidates for Suffolk County Executive, which this year is the largest open seat in the state of New York. I mean, Suffolk County has a lot of people. I think I read it's more than 11 states. So it is really important for state legislators. We do scorecards and we take that into consideration. But we do try to balance, like, whether or not a candidate is viable is one of the things that we take into consideration. Do they have a path to victory? Like, is it realistic?
Right.
Try not to take just pyrrhic endorsements. We don't think that serves our purposes. Because ultimately, to the discussion at the beginning, we want to work with people because, again, both Democrats and Republicans and other parties, right, should be supporting initiatives that will get us clean air and clean water. So we want to make sure that we're working together and supporting those folks that do those things. But in this case, in Suffolk County, we only endorsed candidates who supported putting the Clean Water Restoration Act on the ballot.
Understood. As well you should. Any other candidates that you'd like to mention on Long Island that are being endorsed?
You know, we have a lot of friends we've endorsed in Suffolk County. You know, we continue to support Angie Carpenter, who's been a friend for a Town of Islip supervisor over in East Hampton. Kathy Burke Gonzalez is someone that we're excited. You know, we had a great relationship with the current town supervisor in East Hampton. Van Skoik has been fantastic, in particular on offshore wind and on moving to clean energy. So we're really excited there. You know, there's a bunch of people who are not running for office again. And so there's new opportunities. So we're supporting Al Krupski for the town of Southold and Dan Panico and the town of Brookhaven, you know, in Nassau County. You know, Joe Saladino and Don Claven have been working to help support the environment. You know, in North Hempstead, we'd like to see John Kamen get back into office. He was such a champion for the environment when he was a town supervisor before he decided to go work for the county. And we really love to see him back in that seat. You know, I've already mentioned the folks in the Suffolk County Legislature. Of course, we endorsed about 14 people in races in Nassau County, although I will say most of those are incumbents. So they're folks who have been around, and we're excited to see that. And again, we have a bit more of a mix of Republicans and Democrats in that than we did in Suffolk County, where, again, on the legislative side, we just went with Democrats this year because the Republicans were not holding their weight on water.
Right. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're talking to the New York League of Conservation Voters president, Julie Tai, about how to vote for pro-environmental issues and candidates in the upcoming November 7th elections. And we're also covering some of the issues that Long Islanders and people in New York State are facing. You can find out more about Julie Tai and the work of the New York League at www.nylcv.org. That's NYLCV as in New York League of Conservation Voters.org. One of the priorities of the League is wind energy because of the huge potential it has to decarbonize the grid in a very short period of time. Take a moment to describe some of the benefits of offshore wind to Long Island. And after you do that, address some of the misinformation that has been spread around about offshore winds that make some feel like it's really not beneficial.
Sure. So right now, upstate New York, about 90% of their power comes from emission-free sources. Now, that's mostly hydropower and nuclear, but there are some solar panels coming on board and some wind turbines, and that's very exciting. But downstate, really, the majority of the power still comes from fossil fuels. So right now, we're getting 90% about of the energy on Long Island, New York City, the Lower Hudson Valley, comes from these fossil fuel power plants that are really causing air pollution. They're certainly providing, you know, public health impacts associated with things like asthma and cancer that are really troubling for our communities, as well as the fact that they're contributing a huge amount of climate pollution into the environment. So we know that moving to clean energy is critical, right? And not just because the state of New York has passed a law requiring us to move to 100% emissions-free power by 2040, but because we need to be saving people's lives, right? And we know that these pollutions from these power plants is causing people to be sick. And ultimately, there's a certain number of people are dying as a result of that. A single turn of a wind turbine for offshore wind can power the average home for 2 days, right? So they're pretty efficient. They put out a lot of power. We are really excited about how committed the state of New York is to that source of energy and the opportunity it provides, because it's also like near to home, right? Otherwise, renewable energy is going to be pretty far and it's going to require long transmission. And we're going to need some of that. You know, New York City is actually having two big power lines come to bring in a bunch of its clean energy into offset some of the fossil fuel polluting power that they're using now. But offshore wind really provides that opportunity for us to have homegrown near to the energy demand centers, which is Long Island and New York City, right? So that we can have it close by. And so not only are we going to see improvements in air quality as a result of that, we're also going to see real jobs associated with moving to this clean energy source.
Indeed. And when we're talking about wind energy, people are looking at it as something new. It's been done in other parts of the world, but on Long Island, it's new. But it's coming. And I heard someone say that, well, there's not enough of it to make a difference. Address that.
No. So the state of New York has committed so far to getting 9 gigawatts of power from offshore wind. And the state has already contracted for over 8 of those gigawatts to bring our clean energy to shore. It's going to support millions and millions of homes. I think if we get to all nine, it would power more than 6 million homes with clean energy. 6 million homes from offshore sources.
Right.
It could be more than that because technology keeps evolving and improving. And frankly, we are going to be asking the governor and the state legislature to increase the goal, because that's the statutory goal now, is 9,000 megawatts by 2035. We're going to be asking them to go up to 20,000 megawatts by 2050, because we know we're going to need more of that energy as we're moving towards different sources for our transportation system and for our, how we're going to heat and cool our buildings and manufacturing. So those are all things that are going to need additional energy besides that 9 gigawatts, aka 9,000 megawatts.
Right.
There's definitely the ability to bring in a good amount of energy from renewable offshore wind pretty efficiently.
6 million homes is enormous. That is a big bite out of the apple, though. And transitioning to electrification, how is it in terms of cost efficacy for ratepayers?
Sure. So the nice thing about renewable energy is it's stable, right? Once these projects are constructed, they won't be changing, right? The price of the sun and the wind stays the same, right? It's free. Yeah. You're not subject to these geopolitical markets where every time something happens in the Middle East or the Ukraine war with Russia or, you know, a whole variety of other geopolitical forces that impact the price of oil, you don't have that. Right. These are all sources that we have here locally with solar and with wind. So we're really confident that this is going to lead eventually to stable and lower bills overall in the long run. That's not going to be tomorrow. Right now, there could be some small increases in what people are going to see on their electric bill. But in exchange for that, we're going to get less air pollution. Right. We're going to get less these loss of work. We're going to get less people who are sick and home with asthma attacks and who are impacted by cancer. So we're going to see a lot of public health benefits associated with that. So we're really excited to see this moving forward, because we know that these offshore wind will be replacing these fossil fuel polluting plants that are causing a lot of damage to our people. We believe that offshore wind is going to inject about $12 billion into the New York economy and create over 10,000 jobs with the average salary of about $100,000 a year. So these are like good jobs that are going to support families, and we're really excited about that. There's a bunch of misinformation out there about offshore wind that I really think is unfortunate. And again, I want to mention that later this fall, the League and Citizens Campaign for the Environment are going to hold a webinar to remind people of the back to basics about what offshore wind is and why we need it on Long Island and in New York State.
Wind energy enables us to have actual homegrown energy with actual jobs right here.
You got it.
Which is not the case when you're talking about drilling for more oil and adding that to the world's market.
Right. Yes. No oil on Long Island.
No oil on Long Island. And we do spend billions of dollars, however, sending money to other parts of the world and country in order to import energy that we could be creating on Long Island with Long Island's jobs. Recently, the price adjustments were voted down. The companies that got contracts wanted to increase prices because of inflation that had happened since they had put in for the work. How is that going to impact things?
Look, I'm confident that the governor is committed to getting us to a clean energy future. And she, you know, recently, actually after that decision, they announced the largest investment and commitment that any state has made in this country to offshore wind. I do think that there were some necessary price adjustments to ensure that these renewable energy projects are able to be constructed. You know, these are projects that were bid before the pandemic. NYSERDA, which is the state agency that oversees this, has been evolving what they're putting into their contracts. So now the new projects that were just announced last week by the governor, they all include an inflation adjustment in the contract.
Mm.
So that you don't have the situation of needing to go back. You know, I am pleased that the governor very quickly and the NYSERDA very quickly after the decision, you know, they've put out a request for information about a process to ensure that there's competitive bidding to look at how they might be able to make adjustments in the prices that were these pre-COVID prices, these pre-pandemic, pre-supply chain, you know, crises. pre very significant increases in inflation and the cost of lending. I feel confident that we're going to move forward with a process that will enable these near-term projects that are really important, right? We have one project that's getting ready to put their first steel in the water, as they say, the South Fork Wind Project. That should be coming pretty darn soon. I think you may hear more news about that very soon this week. But we need to make sure that we get these other early projects going so that we don't lose any of that momentum that we have. But certainly the commitment that the governor made last week is really important. Three new projects that are going to generate more than 4,000 megawatts power is really exciting.
It certainly is. That is clean energy. And I do want to ask you about something on the negative side, something that's a little bit frightening. I looked up the League of Conservation Voters, not the New York League, but that's the national organization, the League of Conservation Voters, environmental voting score of the new Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. And his lifetime environmental voting score is 2%. Now, I thought Lee Zeldin was bad at 14%, 2%, and his 2022 score is 0%. Now, I can understand how some fringe people in the party can be entirely anti-environmental, but for the elected leader of the House to have this record is almost hard to believe. Of course, it isn't hard to believe because we had a president like this who was willing to do such things as putting a coal lobbyist in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency. But what are your feelings on the ability of someone like Mike Johnson to rise to the top in this day and age when we know about climate change and we see the risks of air pollution and everything else?
First, I'm really grateful that we have Senator Schumer in the Senate, leading the Senate, so that we make sure that anything really terrible that the House decides to advance, the Senate will squash. I feel pretty confident about that. Senator Schumer has been a huge champion. You know, his top priority was getting the Inflation Reduction Act passed, which was previously called something else, and the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which are making major investments into fighting climate change, into offshore wind, into getting renewable industries up and running, into EVs, so that we can really make these transitions. And we have actually created, as a side note, we've created a guide for consumers on the Inflation Reduction Act to give consumers an idea about what's available for them from that very large climate package. The most amount of money, $369 billion, the most amount of money any country in the world has ever dedicated to fighting climate change. So first, I want to express my gratitude to Senator Schumer for that. You know, I do think it's pretty disheartening. I mean, I think I'm happy that they chose this guy over the other guy that they were going to choose, Jim Jordan. He seemed really quite troubling. I don't know much about this speaker, much like most Americans, I think, don't know very much about this speaker. Yeah. Obviously, if his score is that abysmal, it's pretty telling that he's not going to be an environmental champion. And so we're going to need to be looking to our New York congressional delegation to push back on that. You know, certainly I would expect that we get more and better from our delegation. They know how important the environment is to their constituents, you know, in particular on Long Island. It was pretty disappointing to see Congressman D'Esposito pushing back on an offshore wind project. It's not been the case with the rest of the delegation, thankfully, and we have a lot of support within the New York delegation for offshore wind, for example. And I know Congressman Garbarino, for example, has solar panels on his own home. But it is pretty troubling that we have a new Speaker of the House who is, I mean, if you have a score that low, you're not just not prioritizing this. You're going to be pretty negative on these issues. And I think that's unfortunate because I bet his constituents also want to have clean air and clean water and moving to clean energy.
Julie Tai, I know you have another commitment, and so we need to wrap this up. Thank you so much for your work and for everything you've done over the years. It's greatly appreciated, and for joining us again on the Healthy Planet radio program.
Thank you so much for having me. I want to remind everybody, early voting is already going on. Please make sure you get out and vote on November 7th.
Perfect. Yes, we'll talk about that after I let you go. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We've been talking to the New York League of Conservation Voters, President Julie Tai, about how to vote for pro-environment issues and candidates in the upcoming November 7th elections. You can find out more about Julie Tai and the work of the New York League of Conservation Voters at NYLCV. That's www.nylcv.org. And that leaves us with just one more thing to discuss, and that is getting out to vote. Now that you've heard about the great promise and all the life-saving potential of clean energy and other exciting environmental measures that are actually in the works and dependent upon you for your support to protect our air, water, soil, and health, it's up to each one of us to become an active part of these solutions. That requires, again, you to vote. You heard how the Suffolk County Legislature chose politics over the health of their constituency and the safety of our drinking water. How they chose to not give voters the right to vote for the protection of our drinking water with the Suffolk County Water Quality Restoration Act. You heard about the public hearing where dozens of citizens and experts came out and overwhelmingly spoke out in favor of giving us the right to vote for clean water. But despite that clear public support, the Republicans, in this case, in the legislature, chose power over doing the right thing for their constituents. But as Julie said, this is not about choosing one party over another. It's about holding our elected officials accountable when they ignore our needs. And we do that by voting. Remember, politicians don't care as much about what you think as they do about how you vote. If you don't vote, you may end up in a world where your wisdom is not reflected in the actions of government, and where self-serving actions of politicians have no ramifications for those public officials. So know your vote is important and make a commitment right now to get out and vote. Better yet, call a few of your friends and go out to vote together. And as Julie mentioned earlier, as a New Yorker, you can actually go out and vote early today through Sunday. There are early voting centers across Long Island. To find out where to vote, go to this website. It's www.voteearlyny.org. That's voteearlyny.org. When you go to that site, you'll be able to choose where you live on a map. Once you click on that, it'll tell you when your early voting centers are open. It'll tell you also where your voting place is. Easy peasy. So, you know how to do it. You're empowered. You have the information. Now make it happen. Before we end for the evening, I'll ask you, have you gotten value from listening to this show? Do you enjoy the unique music that you hear on WUSB? The mind-expanding talk? If so, please give us a call at 631-632-6901 and pledge your support in any amount. We can send you a donation invoice, or you can donate with a credit or debit card to keep WUSB alive and broadcasting all day long. 631-632-6901. Or pledge online at www.wusb.fm. We have premium thank you gifts to share with you as well, if just listening to us and getting the enlightenment and empowerment of our radio shows is not enough for you. With your donation, you can get a hat, a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, a water bottle, mug, CD, or an exclusive WUSB tote and hat for your recurring pledge of $5 or more each month. Give us a call, 631-632-6901, or go to www.wusb.fm. Your donations are tax deductible by the amount allowed by law. And that's all we have time for this evening. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. I'll be with you again at the same time 2 weeks from today on Friday, November 17th at 6 p.m. and every month thereafter at 6 p.m. on the first and third Fridays of the month. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to the Natural Alternatives lineup with great hosts from Eugene Zamperone to Beth Fitteni to Courtney Bozick to John Scardina, sharing cutting-edge information on health, our environment, social issues, and much, much more. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. For more info on Healthy Planet and our radio show, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. And like our Facebook page, which is at Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right, and of course, by voting in this coming election, this coming Tuesday, November 7th. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four or multi-legged friends. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this beautiful planet that we all share. Good night.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience. But every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.